The following previews are of Graphic Audio Productions, rated for mature audiences due to scenes of intense violence and sexual situations.
You would allow your beloved husband to be tortured for the sake of your outlaw adopted daughter? We will take his nose first, right to here. It makes for a gruesome sight indeed, and assures that poor Gravis will be forever an outcast.
Why would you be doing such a thing? And yourself claiming to be a man of God?
Why, you ask? Because of your daughter, foolish woman. Because your dear Jilly's evil alliance with the heretic Avalyn could bring about the end of the world.
Why are we down here?
Here is where I will find my answers.
Get back! Would you like to see again the world of the living?
Ah, yes. The girl. How sweet that capture will prove. Perhaps I might find time to take pleasure with her before I present her to my superiors.
Where are the guards? Who are you?
A friend of Avalyn Despris and a friend of Bradwarden.
Oh! By the gods! Good show! Oh, but you'll get your due, Francis the Fool!
Search every passage and every room! All doors barred and guarded! Now! Now!
Don't miss R.A. Salvatore's Demon Wars Book 2, The Demon Spirit Part 3. Available now from Graphic Audio.
Serrano Legacy, Book 7, Against the Odds, Part 1. In Graphic Audio.
What?
Hands on your head. Don't move.
What's going on?
I have orders to separate you from the regular space service as of today.
I haven't done anything wrong.
Fleet has no place for your kind.
Squeezer, Esme, most recent rank 03, separated by order of Admiral Serrano? Grandmother. She double-crossed us.
Bad news.
What?
Peter Origamos, Consuline's foreign minister. Mother, killed him.
Miranda, you can't expect me to let it go.
Damn and blast, Cecilia. The man had my husband killed. He was a despicable, slimy...
Leave the Familius. I'll take you.
Halt breach. Report all starboard aft teams.
Sir, we've got a peak our chem scan doesn't identify. Something with a molecular weight of 16.
16? Lieutenant, didn't I tell you to look out for methane?
Emergency. We have a potentially explosive gas mix.
Sir, I'm scared. I can't just stand here.
Sure you can. Smartest thing you can do.
No! Don't leave me behind!
No! Don't!
Graphic Audio. A movie in your mind.
Graphic Audio presents William W. Johnstone's The Last Gunfighter.
Narrated by Ken Jackson. With performances by James Konacek, Jeff Baker, Eric Messner, Ren Casey, Nathan Bennett, Jonathan Watkins, Christopher Graybill, Elizabeth Jernigan, Michael Glenn, Richard Rowan, Amanda Thickpenny, Mort Shelby, Tony Nam, Dylan Lynch, Terrence Aselford, Tom Simpson, Stephen Carpenter, Jason Stiles, and Nanette Savard. The Last Gunfighter, number 13, Savage Country.
Himself.
He's gonna be a mess, all right.
Frank Morgan heard laughter as he strode into the lobby of the Grand Central Hotel in El Paso, Texas. Ugly laughter, the sort that made the hair on the back of his neck stand up. It came from the barroom to his right. Frank ignored the sound as best he could and continued on across the lobby toward the desk. Whatever was going on in the hotel bar, it was none of his affair. He had come to El Paso on business of his own.
Yes, sir, may I help you?
His manner was polite, even though Frank was dressed in worn range clothes that still carried the dust of the trail and had a pair of saddlebags slung over his left shoulder. In a bustling frontier city like El Paso, a man who looked like that might be a saddle tramp with barely a penny to his name, or he might be an important businessman with millions of dollars in the bank. As a matter of fact, Frank came closer to fitting the second description.
You should have a reservation for me. Name's Frank Morgan.
The clerk's eyes widened a little as they went to the Colt 45 Peacemaker with walnut grips holstered on Frank's right hip.
Of course.
He knew the name all right. More than likely, he had seen it in some of the dime novels that had been written about the man known as the Drifter.
Yes, sir, Mr. Morgan. We have your room all ready for you, one of the finest in the hotel. If you'll just sign in.
Another burst of laughter came from the nearby bar room as the clerk turned the book around for Frank to sign. Frank glanced in that direction, then picked up the pen from the inkwell and signed his name. He left the space for his home address blank. It had been a long time since he had one of those that meant anything.
Have you been on the trail very long, Mr. Morgan?
I spent most of the winter down in the Rio Grande Valley, visiting a friend. Came up to El Paso to meet with another.
Roanne Williamson was the friend, an intelligent, attractive woman. It had been difficult to leave her, but the combination of the approaching spring, his restless nature, and a telegram from Conrad Browning asking Frank to meet him in El Paso had been all he needed to prompt him to move on.
Thank you, Mr. Morgan. If you have a buggy or some other vehicle you'd like to put in our barn...
Nope, just a saddle mount and a pack horse. And already left them at the livery stable down the street, along with my dog. A fella named Gomez runs it, I think.
Oh yes, Pablo Gomez. A good man. He'll take good care of your animals.
That's what I thought from the looks of the place.
Hold him down! Don't let him move! Hold him!
I got him! No, he ain't going anywhere!
Yeah. What's going on in there?
I'm afraid I wouldn't know, sir.
Frank shrugged, telling himself again that it was none of his business. The clerk plucked a key off a rack on the wall behind the desk and started to give it to Frank. Another moment and Frank would have taken the key, gone up to his room, and forgotten all about the hyenas in the bar room.
No! Please, don't! Please!
Frank's face hardened. Somebody was in trouble in there, and whether it was any of his business or not, he wasn't the sort of man to turn his back on folks who needed help.
Hang on to that key. I'll be back in a minute or two.
Although it was the afternoon of a bright spring day outside, the windowless bar room was shadowy, lit only by a couple of oil lamps in the form of chandeliers. The L-shaped bar was to Frank's left, with tables in front of him and booths along the wall to his right. A nervous-looking bartender stood behind the bar. There were only three other men in the place. Two of them had the third man bent backward over the table in one of the booths. One of them had a hand planted in the middle of the third man's chest, holding him down, while a bowie knife glinted in the other hand.
I'll hold him. Why, you take his pants off! I bet he'll sing real pretty once we carve on him some.
Mr. Barkeep, aren't you gonna do something about this?
You reckon I ought to go for the law?
Likely it'll be too late by the time they got here.
Oh, you don't know these Callahan boys. They're crazy.
You're right. I don't know them, but I believe we're about to meet.
Hey, mister, you should not have...
Get the britches, Judd!
Stop it! Please!
Hey!
One of the Callahans had the hapless prisoner's trousers halfway off. He stopped what he was doing and straightened, turning toward Frank. The one with the knife kept the man pinned down, but he turned to look over his shoulder at Frank.
Move on, mister. This ain't got nothing to do with you.
Yeah, get the hell out of here, if you know what's good for you.
They were cut from the same cloth, with coarse beard-stubbled rat-like features. You could see the family resemblance. The one with the knife appeared to be a little older.
That's a problem. Always had a hard time doing what was good for me.
Well, you better do it now, or we'll slice off your cojones, too.
What about him? What did he do to make you want to mutilate him?
Do? He didn't do anything. He was just here.
So you just decided to torture and probably kill a man simply for the fun of it?
Why the hell not? If you're mean enough and strong enough, you can do anything you want in this world. And there ain't nobody meaner and stronger than us.
That's where you're wrong.
You bastard! I'll learn you!
The impact threw him back against the partitions between booths. He bounced off and let go of his half-drawn gun. It slipped out of the holster and thudded to the floor.
Simon!
The man with the knife hadn't moved.
You must be Simon.
He stared at Frank, who still held the Colt level and steady, for a few seconds before he spoke.
Who in blazes are you, mister? I never saw a draw like that before.
Name's Frank Morgan.
The Drifter?
Some call me that.
I ain't gonna draw on you, Morgan. I wouldn't have a chance. No more than my brother Judd did.
Put the knife away and let that man up, and there won't be a need for any more shooting.
Oh. Yeah, sure. You didn't have to kill him. He wasn't near as fast as you.
Fast enough so that there was no time to get fancy. Take his body and get out.
This ain't over. I ain't about to forget this, Morgan.
Your choice. But the smart thing to do would be to bury your brother and ride on out of El Paso.
Reckon I have a hard time doing what's good for me, too.
The man who had been the object of the Callahan brothers' cruelty had straightened up and was trying to pull his clothes back into a semblance of order. He was thin and well-dressed. From the look of him, a gambler, maybe. El Paso had plenty of them.
Oh, thank you. I think those lunatics would have killed me if you hadn't come along to stop them, Mr. Morgan, was it?
That's right.
Jonas Wade.
Was that really all there was to it? Just sheer meanness on their part?
I assure you it was. I was just sitting there, playing solitaire, when they came in and looked around, and then set upon me, taunting me and trying to goad me into fighting with them. When I refused, they said I was a coward, and that I didn't have any need for my,
Well, it's over now. I don't reckon the one that's left will bother you again.
Maybe not. But I don't intend to give him a chance. I believe I'll fold my tent and steal away like an Arab in the night. My stay in El Paso has been profitable, but let's face it, there are other places where a man could play cards. Thanks again, Mr. Morgan.
Frank gave Jonas a nod as the gambler gathered up his cards and left the barroom. Frank couldn't quite comprehend just yelling for help and not fighting back when threatened with trouble, but he supposed some folks were like that. He was glad he had stepped in to help Jonas, whether the gambler had really deserved it or not. His contempt was reserved more for the bartender who had stood by, apparently intending to do nothing, while the Callahans had their sadistic fun.
What the hell's wrong with you, mister? Don't you have a shotgun or at least a bung starter under the bar in case of trouble?
We don't have trouble in here. This is a civilized place.
Better stop letting folks come in, then. Human beings aren't naturally civilized. Sometimes they have to have it forced on them.
The clerk had come out from behind his desk and now stood in the arched opening between the lobby and the barroom.
I'm sorry for the disturbance, Mr. Morgan. Thank you for stepping in when you did. Otherwise, things might have gotten, well, awful.
Sorry about the blood on the floor.
It could have been a lot worse.
I reckon I'll take that key now.
Oh, of course. If you'll come with me?
Frank followed the clerk to the desk. Once again, the clerk took a key from the rack, and once again he was about to hand it to Frank when he was interrupted, this time by one of the men who had come into the lobby while Simon Callahan was dragging out the body of his brother.
Well, I see that some things never change.
Frank turned slowly and found himself looking into the eyes of Conrad Browning, the man who had asked him to come here to El Paso. Conrad Browning, who was also Frank Morgan's son.
Conrad, it's been a while. You've changed.
You haven't.
I reckon I'm a little older, a little grayer. But you, you're a grown man now.
It had been several years since Frank had seen the son he hadn't even known that he had for most of Conrad's life. He had missed out on so much, just as he hadn't been able to be a part of Victoria Monfort's life when she was growing up. At least he knew for sure that Conrad was his son, while there was still a little uncertainty as to whether or not Victoria was his daughter.
I haven't seen you since shortly after the kidnappings.
That's all in the past, Conrad.
Yes, Ned Pine, Victor Van Bergen, and their thugs are in the past. And, since they murdered her, so is my mother. But I'm sure you remember it well.
Every day, son.
Please don't call me that.
Of course. You look great, Conrad. Going to Harvard was the smart choice. Seems to have worked out for you.
Yes, it has. As I'm sure you know, I tend to all of the business interests that Mother left me. You know, the ones that make you a rich man, thanks to her generosity.
A part of Conrad still blamed the Drifter for his mother's death. Conrad regarded as his real father the man Vivian married after her short-lived marriage to Frank had been annulled by her father.
Conrad, I wish things were different between us, but I can't change the past.
No one is asking you to, Frank. I'm not a college boy anymore. I understand the ways of the world. Things happen and one has to move on.
Well, you've certainly grown into a fine young man. Nice suit, very stylish hat, and I see you're letting your hair grow long.
Yes. I wear it over my ear because that's the new style. Of course, it also helps to cover up the ear my captors sliced off.
Yes, I understand.
I need to talk to you. Why don't we go into the bar? I'm sure the smell of freshly burned gunpowder won't bother you.
Frank's jaw tightened a little. That last comment hadn't been necessary. It was starting to look as if Conrad wasn't interested in being friends, let alone having a real father and son relationship with Frank.
Sure. I'll buy you a drink.
They went into the bar room and sat down at a table well away from the spot where Judd Callahan had died.
Barkeep, bring us two beers.
Excuse me, I'd rather have a cognac with water on the side.
Your letter caught up to me while I was down in South Texas. I'm glad I was able to get out here to El Paso while you're still here.
I would have waited for you as long as I possibly could. It's very important that we talk.
I agree.
A lot of money is riding on it.
Money. Conrad's impersonal tone made it clear that nothing else was involved here. This meeting was just business. That was all.
Tell me about it. What brings you to El Paso?
I came to talk to you, of course. This is the closest large city to Ophir, although compared to Boston, it's hardly a city at all, of course.
What's Ophir?
I'm getting ahead of myself. Perhaps I'd better start at the beginning.
It's always a good place.
As you know, since my graduation from Harvard, I've taken a more active hand in the running of our businesses. I trust you've been getting regular reports from your attorneys?
When I stay in one place long enough for them to catch up to me.
Then you've seen for yourself that the various companies are doing quite well and turning a healthy profit.
You've done a good job. I'm sure your mother would be very proud of you.
Frank saw Conrad's fingers tighten on the glass and supposed he shouldn't have mentioned Vivian. That just dredged up bad memories and piled them on the table between them.
Yes. Well, you may not be aware that we've recently purchased a railroad.
No, I don't recollect seeing anything about that.
The New Mexico, Rio Grande, and Oriental Line. We're building a spur route from Lordsburg up to Ophir, in southwestern New Mexico territory.
So Ophir is a town. I hadn't heard of it.
A boomtown, actually. It hasn't been there very long. It sprang up because of the gold and copper and silver deposits in the area. There are quite a few lucrative mines near there in the Mogollon and Mimbres Mountains.
I'm familiar with the area, although it's been a long time since I passed through those parts.
Browning Mines and Manufacturing own several of those mines. I expect that they will make us richer than we already are. As will the railroad, too, of course, if it gets built.
Having trouble with the railroad?
The railroad has been nothing but trouble, right from the start. We've run into numerous delays. Some trouble is to be expected, of course, in an undertaking as major as the construction of a rail line. But I'm not just talking about bad weather and construction difficulties.
What kind of trouble?
According to the superintendent, there have been numerous instances of deliberate destruction. On top of that, one of our payroll shipments was stolen, and the workers threatened to quit unless they received a bonus to compensate them for their pay being late. To make matters worse, they've also been threatened by some of the local savages.
Indian trouble? Been a while since I heard about any of that. Old Victoria was killed more than 10 years ago down in Mexico, and Geronimo and his warriors are on the White Mountain Reservation, living in peace for a change.
Not all of them, evidently. From what I've been told, the marauders are definitely Apaches.
Well, supposedly, all the young men have surrendered to the U.S. Army, along with Geronimo. But I guess it is possible that a few bands of renegades are still hiding out in the mountains. There have always been rumors of such things, and they come up again every time a horse goes missing from some isolated ranch.
We've heard the rumors, too.
Sounds like you have trouble, all right.
We have trouble. Although your percentage is relatively small, you own part of these businesses, too.
I let other folks handle that. Folks who know what they're doing when it comes to that sort of thing.
Who knows more than the famous drifter about handling trouble?
Frank felt anger flare inside him. From the sound of things, Conrad was getting around to asking for his help. But yet the young man couldn't keep from expressing, at least a little, his disapproval of his father. Maybe what Frank ought to do, he thought, was tell Conrad to stomp his own snakes. Frank glanced up and saw a bulky man in a dusty black suit coming into the room. Light from the oil lamps reflected on the tin star pinned to his lapel.
Frank Morgan?
That's me.
Hear tell you killed a man in here a while ago.
That's right. He drew first. Or at least he tried to.
Hell. You're the drifter. Anytime you draw against anybody, it's the same thing as murder in my book.
Then it's a good thing for me your book isn't the same as the law.
I'm the constable hereabouts. Name of John Selman. I'd arrest you if I could, Morgan. But since I can't, I'll just say I want you out of El Paso.
A warning like that usually comes from the sheriff or the city marshal. I don't see them here.
My say-so's good enough. Better get on your horse and ride.
Frank had heard of John Selman, although their trails had never crossed before. The man had a long reputation as a shootist and a shady character operating on both sides of the law. Frank considered it a minor miracle that someone like Selman had evidently been legally elected to a law enforcement position, but he supposed that was the prerogative of the citizens of El Paso.
I won't be in town for long. I have business elsewhere.
Well, see that you don't linger. The law can't guarantee your safety from Simon Callahan. You killed his brother, and he's liable to come after you to settle the score.
And you wouldn't lose any sleep over it if Callahan was successful in that, would you, Constable?
Not a damn bit. I hate all you famous gun throwers. Somebody ought to shoot the whole lot of you.
But it won't be you, will it, Selman? Not unless they all turn their backs on you.
I've had my say. If you stay in El Paso, then whatever happens is on your head, Morgan.
I see you make friends just as easily as ever.
I'm not interested in being friends with the polecat like Selman. Now, Conrad, you were talking about all the trouble you're having getting this railroad spur to Ophir built.
Yes, and I was wondering...
Conrad paused and drank the last of his cognac, chasing it with water from the glass at his side.
I was wondering if you'd help.
Help that spur line get through?
Frank wanted to make sure there was no misunderstanding.
That's right.
I don't know a damn thing about building a railroad.
I do, and so does my construction superintendent. What we need you to do is to find out who's responsible for all the problems plaguing us and put a stop to them.
In whatever way is necessary?
In whatever way is necessary. The company has sunk a great deal of money into this project already. Not only that, but to make the most from our mining interests that we can, that railroad needs to go through. I wouldn't go so far as to say that our financial survival depends on this, but it is important, Frank. Very important.
Although he hated to admit it, even to himself, there was a part of Frank that wanted to tell Conrad to go straddle a stump. The boy had made it plain that he didn't like Frank, didn't think of him as a father, and just flat didn't have much use for him. But that had changed now. Now Conrad needed him, but not as a father. No, not that. He needed Frank Morgan's skill as a gunfighter. Walk away, Frank told himself. Stand up, walk out of here, and don't look back. The boy had wanted to stand on his own 2 feet. Now let him. And yet, Conrad didn't know how to handle a situation like this. He had no idea what he was facing. If Frank refused him, he would have to hire some other troubleshooter, somebody who might not be as honest or as capable as Frank was.
All right, I'll do it.
A look of relief began to appear on Conrad's face.
For $100 a month and expenses.
What?
$100 a month and expenses. Those are fighting wages. At least, they used to be the last time I took a job like this.
Let me get this straight. You want me to hire you?
Seems fair, since we're just talking business and all.
But you own part of the company.
You'll be paying me with company funds, so I reckon I'll be footing part of the bill for my own wages. You don't hear me complaining about that.
This is insane! You're my...
Understanding dawned in Conrad's eyes.
Oh... This is your way of getting back at me for not calling you Daddy.
I've told you my terms. Take them or leave them.
I'll take them.
Good. Since it's too late in the afternoon, we'll leave tomorrow. That'll give me time to stock up on supplies.
Makes sense.
You have a saddle horse?
No. I arrived here on the train, and I haven't had need of a horse.
You'll need one now. I'll see about you getting a good mount.
We could take the train to Lordsburg.
No, I'd rather ride. Stormy doesn't cotton much to being cooped up in a train car, and neither does Wolf.
Of course.
For that matter, I don't much care for it either. I prefer being out in the open air.
And maybe he was just being a little contrary, he told himself, as well as curious. Frank wanted to get Conrad on the back of a horse and see how the boy handled himself.
Well, if we're going to be traveling all the way to Ophir on horseback, I need my rest. I believe I'll take my dinner in my room and retire early.
Just be ready to ride first thing in the morning.
If you insist.
Pablo Gomez was a wiry little Mexican with sweeping white mustaches and a knowing way with a horse. Even Stormy seemed to like him, and the Appaloosa was pretty much a one-man horse. Frank saw that Stormy had been placed in a roomy stall with clean straw and had been curried and combed as well. Wolf appeared content too, rising slowly from the entrance of the livery barn to greet Frank.
I need to buy another saddle horse.
Why, senor? You will not find one anywhere that is better than the horse you rode in here.
I know, but this is for somebody else. A business associate.
Frank didn't know if Conrad had mentioned their relationship to anyone in El Paso. It might be better to keep that quiet. More than once in the past, trouble had descended on Conrad's head simply because he was the son of Frank Morgan. It wasn't fair, but it was a fact and had to be dealt with.
This man, he is a good rider?
Well, it's been quite a while since I've seen him do it, but as I remember it, he can ride. Rode with one of those English saddles with no horn on it.
Senor, I thought you said he could ride. That one, the fine-looking black horse. Senor Frank, you are a fine judge of the horses, even from such a distance as this.
Well, Pablo, you get to be this age, you almost have to learn some stuff.
His name is Infierno. He has plenty of speed and stamina, what you Texans call sand. You can ride him all day and he will not tire.
How much?
For you, senor, with a saddle and tack thrown in, $200 American.
Let me take a closer look at him.
Of course, senor.
Gomez opened the gate and let Frank into the corral. For the next few minutes, Frank checked over the animal with an experienced horseman's eye. Everything about Infierno indicated that he was indeed a fine horse.
All right, I'll take him.
Your associate will not be disappointed, senor.
I'm not sure I'd count on that.
You say something, senor?
Oh, nothing, Pablo. Just have him ready to ride in the morning, please. I'm heading over to the mercantile, check on supplies I ordered.
Frank had given the clerk at the mercantile an order for enough food, supplies, and ammunition to last him and Conrad until they got to Lordsburg. They could resupply there for the rest of the journey to Ophir. The clerk had promised to deliver the supplies to Pablo Gomez's livery in the morning. Frank was up before dawn the next morning. Despite the fact that spring had come, at this hour there was a lingering chill in the air from the night before as he walked to the livery stable. Pablo Gomez and his sons, who worked for him as hostlers, were already up and about. The supplies from Holtzman's store had been delivered, and Gomez was lashing them to the pack horse when Frank came in.
Buenos dias, Senor Morgan. We will have Stormy and Infierno saddled soon and ready for you and your friend.
Gracias, Senor Gomez. It was a quiet night.
Very much so.
I'll be back in a while after my associate and I have breakfast.
All will be in readiness, Senor. On this, you have the word of Pablo Gomez.
Good enough for me.
When he got back to the hotel, Frank looked in the dining room but didn't see Conrad. He knew the young man's room number. Conrad's room, in fact, was just down the hall from Frank's. So he went upstairs and banged a fist on the door.
What? Who the hell?
Time to get up. We got a long way to go, so we need to get riding. You are ready to go, aren't you, Conrad?
I'll be downstairs. Just give me a few minutes.
Don't take too long. We're burning daylight.
Daylight? The damn sun's not even up yet.
Frank went downstairs to the dining room and ordered breakfast for both of them. The food was on the table, and Frank was halfway through his first cup of coffee by the time Conrad entered the dining room. The young man's eyes were bleary with sleepiness.
This is an ungodly hour for anyone to be up.
Drink some coffee and get yourself on the outside of some flapjacks and bacon and eggs. You'll feel a lot better then.
I wouldn't count on it.
Despite what he said, Conrad seemed to have a hearty appetite. He dug into the food and almost matched the amount that Frank put away. The coffee was strong and black, and that helped too. By the time they were finished, Conrad looked like he felt halfway human again.
Better go back upstairs and change clothes.
What's wrong with what I'm wearing?
I suppose it's fine if you're going to be talking to a banker or a politician, but it's not very good for riding.
Frank leaned a little to the side so he could look down at Conrad's feet.
You want to put on some boots, too, instead of those shoes.
What if I don't have any?
Then we'll go over to Holtzman's and buy whatever you need.
I have boots. I'm just not accustomed to dressing like a ranch hand.
Better get used to it. Do you have a gun?
Do I need one?
You might. Out here, it's better to be ready for trouble.
Yes, I recall how it seems to follow you around.
Frank suppressed the urge to point out that Conrad's trouble was the reason they were going to Ophir.
You didn't answer me about the gun.
I have one.
How about a holster?
Remember what it's like here on the frontier. I thought it prudent to be prepared.
Good. After you change clothes, strap on that gun belt too. I reckon you didn't bring a long gun.
You mean a rifle? That didn't occur to me.
It's all right. I bought a Winchester for you at Holtzman's. It'll be at the livery with the rest of our gear.
So I'm to be decked out as a gunfighter as well?
Frank smiled grimly. No matter what sort of clothes Conrad wore, or how many guns he carried, Frank doubted that anybody would ever take him for a gunfighter.
Let's get started. I reckon you got some luggage.
Of course.
Make arrangements to leave it here at the hotel until you get back from Ophir. You won't need anything except the clothes on your back and your gun.
Not even a change of clothes?
All right, one change of clothes. Everything else we'll need is already on the pack horse. I'll head back over to the stable. Join me there as soon as you can.
Conrad nodded. Frank stopped at the desk in the lobby to tell the clerk to add what he owed onto Conrad's bill. That was one of those expenses Conrad was supposed to take care of, and then left the Grand Central. The sun was up now, but it was still low on the horizon to the east. El Paso was starting to come alive for another day. Already there were quite a few people on the streets. Frank had a long-standing habit of being cautious, of course. That was the only way he had stayed alive so long. His eyes were always moving, checking his surroundings. He saw a loaded freight wagon pull around a corner and start slowly toward him, its cargo piled high in the bed behind the driver. What he didn't see, until only about a dozen feet separated him from the wagon, was that Simon Callahan was walking behind the vehicle, a shotgun clutched in his hands. Frank didn't know Callahan was there until the man suddenly stepped out into the open and jerked up the greener. Even before he was consciously aware of it, before the sight of Simon Callahan pointing a scattergun at him had fully registered on his brain, Frank's muscles were moving. He threw himself forward in a rolling dive that brought him even closer to Callahan. The buckshot was just beginning to spread out as it passed over Frank's head and through the space where he had been an instant earlier. The man driving the freight wagon cried out in pain as some of the flying buckshot struck him in the back. As Frank came up out of his forward roll, he had the Colt Peacemaker already in his hand.
Morgan, you bastard!
The bullets struck Callahan at a rising angle. The first one tore through his groin and on up into his belly before it shattered his spine. The second slug took him in the middle of his torso and punched a hole through his left lung, barely missing his heart. Frank straightened from his crouch and strode toward Callahan as the echoes of the shots died away.
You had to try to even the score, didn't you, Callahan? And all that got you was killed.
Bastard. You ain't heard the last.
His head fell to the side, and more blood spilled from his mouth.
I've heard the last of you.
Frank hurried forward to check on the wounded driver.
How bad are you hit, mister?
I don't know. All I know is it hurts like hell.
Somebody fetch a doctor.
Señor Morgan, you are all right?
I'm okay. Buckshot just scraped the skin.
Oh, come to my stable. I have some medicine I can put on that scratch.
Something you use on your horses?
It is better than anything you will get from a regular doctor.
All right, let's go.
Stop right there, Morgan.
Frank recognized the voice, so he wasn't surprised when he turned slowly and saw John Selman standing there. The constable glared at him, looked at Callahan's body, and then glared some more at Frank.
You just couldn't keep from killing somebody else, could you?
Seemed like the right thing to do at the time, since Callahan had just let loose at me with both barrels of a greener and was reaching for his pistol.
Si, Señor Selman. Es verdad. I saw it happen. So did my sons, and there must have been 20 or 30 more people along the street who saw Señor Callahan attack Señor Morgan.
If I want your opinion, Greaser, I'll ask for it. Didn't I tell you to get out of town, Morgan?
That's what I was trying to do. I was on my way to the livery stable to get my horse.
How come you didn't ride out yesterday?
Because I had things to do. I still do. Now either arrest me, Selman, in which case I'll hire the best lawyer in town and get any charges thrown out as soon as a judge hears what happened, or stay out of my way.
Selman looked like he was just itching to hook and draw, but he had the sense not to try it. He was a gunman, but not a fast draw. The craven shot from ambush was more his style.
You say you're leaving?
As soon as I can.
All right. As long as you're leaving, I don't reckon it matters all that much. There are enough witnesses to both shootings, so the coroner's jury won't have no trouble coming back with a verdict.
I'm obliged.
Just don't let the sun go down on you again in El Paso.
Don't worry. It won't.
Ain't nobody sent for the damn undertaker yet.
Never have I seen a man move so quickly, Señor Morgan. I stepped out of my barn and I saw that man Callahan with his shotgun walking along behind a wagon. Then I saw you coming toward us, and I remember what I had heard about you shooting that Judd Callahan yesterday. But before I could call a warning, everything began to happen at once, and ha! Oh, yay, my apologies, Señor Morgan.
There's nothing for you to apologize for, amigo. There was nothing you could have done. Anyway, you helped me out with Selman, and I'm grateful for that.
Oh, Selman. Dios mío, that is one bad hombre. If he is your enemy, it is wise to have eyes in the back of your head, I am thinking.
Gomez dabbed some of the medicinal ointment on Frank's wounded shoulder.
Hey, take it easy there, Pablo.
Ah, the big bad gunfighter is a baby.
Conrad showed up about 10 minutes later, wearing boots, jeans, a flannel shirt, a canvas jacket, and a brown Stetson. A gun belt was buckled around his hips, and in the holster was a pistol that Frank recognized as a .38 caliber Colt Lightning. It was a good gun, even though he preferred the added stopping action of a .44 or .45.
Well, it's about time.
I noticed the Undertaker's wagon down the street, and it came as no surprise when I heard some of the bystanders talking about how Frank Morgan had killed another man.
He didn't give me much choice.
Who was he? The brother of the man you killed yesterday?
As a matter of fact, yeah.
What if they had other brothers?
I reckon I'll deal with that when and if the time comes. Wouldn't be the first time such a thing has happened.
No, I imagine not.
You know, if I wasn't good with a gun, you never would have come to me for help with your railroad problems, now would you?
No, I suppose not.
Conrad looked around, unperturbed by what Frank had said.
You mentioned something about having a horse for me?
Here you are, Senor. A finer mount you will not find in El Paso. Except, of course, for Senor Morgan's Appaloosa.
He's an evil-looking brute. I'm not sure I trust him.
Frank took the reins and handed them to Conrad.
Give him a try.
Is this one of the tricks you Westerners play on greenhorns? As soon as I mount up, is this animal going to go wild and start bucking and trying to throw me off?
Oh, this horse has never bucked anyone off, to my knowledge, Senor. Inferno is a friendly horse.
We'll see.
The explosion Conrad was expecting didn't come. Inferno simply sat there, waiting.
All right. Maybe the horse isn't wild. That still doesn't mean I trust it.
You will learn to trust him, Senor. He will not disappoint you.
Frank mounted up as well and took the reins of the pack horse from Gomez.
I reckon we're ready to ride. So long, amigo.
Vaya con Dios, Senor Morgan. Be sure to bring Senor Stormy and Senor Wolf back here when you return to El Paso. Yeah.
Frank wasn't sure he would be returning to El Paso once he had dealt with the troubles plaguing Conrad's rail line, but he didn't say as much. He just smiled and waved to the little liveryman. Beside him, Conrad banged his heels harder than necessary against Inferno's sides, but the horse just took it stolidly and walked down the street next to Stormy. As they rode along, Frank realized that he kept thinking of the railroad as belonging to Conrad, when in reality, he owned part of it too. But Frank had never really cared that much about owning anything except his guns. He supposed that in the eyes of the world, he owned Stormy and Wolf. But to him, they were more like friends and traveling companions. A bunch of other possessions would just weigh a man down. The scenery was beautiful as they left El Paso. The early morning sun washed over the Franklin Mountains to the north, the twisting Rio Grande to the south, and the rugged hills that rose in Mexico on the other side of the border river. The Mexican city of Juarez, originally known as El Paso del Norte, sprawled along the southern bank of the Rio Grande. An older and even larger settlement than the American city to the north, Frank and Conrad angled northwest, following the course of the river for a short distance. Then they crossed the Rio Grande on a long wooden bridge that paralleled a railroad trestle.
Since the river's turned north, when we reach the other side, we'll be in New Mexico territory.
I can read a map, too, Frank.
They had left Texas behind. Now they followed the railroad instead of the river. The terrain flattened out some. There was another range of small mountains ahead of them, but they wouldn't reach those for another day or so, and then would loop around them to the north.
We could have been on there, you know, riding high comfort in a club car.
Breathing smoke and cinders, you mean. It's better to be out here in the fresh air.
That's a matter of opinion.
Besides, a train goes too fast. You don't have a chance to see anything. For example, you'd never see that from the train.
He pointed to the ground at the base of a bush that Conrad was riding past.
Oh my God!
Conrad looked down where Frank had pointed and saw the huge rattlesnake coiled there.
Aren't you going to kill it?
Why? Snake hasn't done anything to me. If we ride on and leave him alone, he'll leave us alone.
But it's poisonous.
Venomous. Poison only comes into play if he bites you. You can eat rattlesnake meat. I have. It's not too bad. Tastes a little like chicken.
Eat snake? I don't think so.
You'd change your tune if you're hungry enough. Then you'd eat snake and be glad to get it.
I'd never get that hungry.
Just because you never have doesn't mean you never will.
Well, if you're not going to kill that vile creature, I am. Even if it doesn't harm one of us, someone else might come along and get bitten. You can't just sit by and ignore something dangerous like that. You get rid of it so it can't threaten anybody else.
He steadied Inferno, then drew a bead and squeezed off two fast shots from the double-action revolver. The thick, headless body writhed furiously for a moment before setting into the stillness of death.
You sure you don't want me to take it along and cook it up for supper tonight?
No, that's perfectly all right. Leave it for the buzzards.
Your kill, your choice.
They rode on. Frank didn't let Conrad see the smile on his face. It wasn't because Conrad had demonstrated his marksmanship, although Frank was pleased by that, too. He was glad that Conrad had risen to the veiled challenge and recognized the danger of leaving a rattler alone just because it wasn't about to strike you. The real danger was to the innocent, unsuspecting folks who might come along later. The boy was learning all right. Yes, sir, he sure was.
I don't think those mountains up ahead are any closer than they were when we left El Paso this morning.
It sort of looks like that. But the truth is, we covered a nice piece of ground today.
How long will it take us to get to Lordsburg?
5 days, maybe six.
We could have been there on the train in less than a day. Oh, I'll give you this, Frank. For an old gunfighter, you can really cook.
Well, first off, I'm not that old. As for the cooking, when you're alone as much as I've been, you learn to take care of yourself.
An extra lasso had been included in the supplies Frank bought at Holtzman's Mercantile. Now Frank took his own rope and the extra one and arranged them in a circle on the ground around the bedrolls.
What's that for?
Snakes are cold-blooded critters, so they seek out warmth. If you don't want to wake up with the rattler sharing your blankets, put a rope around your bed like this. A snake won't crawl over a lasso.
We wouldn't have to worry about such things if we had just...
Taken the train, I know. But there's something else you never see from inside a train car. Look up there.
What are you talking about? I don't see anything.
The light of western stars. If you can't see that, I reckon I feel sorry for you.
Conrad stared at the vast black night sky for a short time.
I suppose I see what you mean. There are rather a lot of them, aren't there?
Millions.
They stretched out on their bedrolls, using their saddles as pillows. Conrad complained a little about how uncomfortable it was, but Frank wasn't surprised when he heard soft snores coming from his son only a few minutes later. A long day in the saddle wore a man out when he wasn't used to it. If you were tired enough, a bedroll and a saddle weren't that bad. The sound was so faint that at first Frank thought he had imagined it. Then it came again, and he knew he hadn't. It could have been almost anything, but Frank knew it for what it was. The sound of a horseshoe striking a rock. It hadn't come from Stormy or Inferno. The distance was too great for that. Out here in the still, thin, dry air, sound could travel for a long way. The horse responsible for those two clinks, which hadn't been repeated, might be a quarter of a mile away. That was still too close for comfort. Frank reached over and scooped up a handful of sand. He tossed it on the embers of the fire, covering up some of them. Two more handfuls of sand put out the rest of the embers. Only when the faint red glow had been completely extinguished did Frank sit up and reach for his Winchester, which he had placed beside his bedroll before he lay down. Frank sat there with every sense alert, being utterly still and quiet. The ground was rocky and sandy, with scattered clumps of hardy grass and stubby mesquite trees and some other bushes here and there. Frank knew that whatever was going to happen was going to happen soon.
Get him!
Suddenly, orange flashes of muzzle flame bloomed in the night. Frank was ready, though. The Winchester came to his shoulder in a swift motion. He fired as soon as the barrel was level, aiming for the muzzle flashes that had just started to split the darkness.
What the hell?
Get down. Stay down.
What are we shooting at?
We're not shooting at anything. Somebody tried to bushwhack us, but I think they're gone now. Stay down, though, until we're sure.
All right.
Were you hit by any of those bullets?
No, I'm fine. I was just startled by the shots. What about you?
Frank was a little touched that the youngster would ask.
I didn't get elected. Thought I heard one of those slugs come close enough to almost nominate me, though.
Can't you just say that you weren't hit?
Reckon I could, but it wouldn't be as colorful.
Who do you think it was?
No way of knowing. I didn't get a good look at them. Didn't really see anything except their muzzle flashes. But if I had to guess, I'd say they were friends or relatives of those Callahan boys back in El Paso. They're the only ones I had trouble with lately.
Of course, it could have been someone looking to avenge one of the other hundreds of men you've killed.
I wouldn't say hundreds.
Scores, then.
Well, can't argue with that.
Frank hadn't heard or seen any signs of the Dry Gulchers since those hoofbeats. It seemed likely they were gone, but he wanted to be sure.
Go take a look around, Wolf.
When he let go, Wolf bounded off into the darkness.
You trust an animal to do your reconnoitering for you?
There's not a better scout around than Wolf.
Frank waited tensely for the quarter of an hour or so that went by before Wolf came loping back into camp. He carried a dead jackrabbit in his strong jaws.
What's that? Some sort of animal?
A jackrabbit. Fresh meat for breakfast in the morning.
You mean the dog just went out and ran down a rabbit instead of doing what you told him?
No. That rabbit tells me there's nobody else around now. If there had been, Wolf wouldn't have taken the time and trouble to do a little hunting. He would have come right back.
You're placing an awful lot of faith in the judgment of an animal.
You gotta trust a few folks in this life. Wolf hasn't let me down yet. Good boy, Wolf. Pull your boots on and get up. We're getting out of here.
What?
We're moving our camp, just in case those hombres decide to come back. And it'll be a cold camp this time, with no embers or smell of wood smoke to lead them to us.
I thought you said they were gone.
Shake those out before you put them on, just in case any scorpions crawled in there while you're asleep.
No. Oh, my God. How many menaces are there out here?
More than you can count.
They saddled up. The darkness didn't bother Frank. He had saddled so many horses he could have done it if he was blind. Conrad, though, struggled with the heavy western saddle. Finally, he got the cinches tightened and everything ready to ride. Frank led the way. The moon rose, adding its light to that of the stars, so they had no trouble being able to see where they were going. After riding for quite a while, Conrad spotted what he thought would be a suitable campsite.
What about there? That looks like a good place to camp.
Nope. You never make camp in an arroyo like that. Too much danger of flash floods.
Floods? Out here in this dry country?
It can come a cloud even out here. And when it does rain, it rains hard. The water runs off fast, and the dry washes fill up in a hurry. They're nasty little rivers that can sweep a camp away in seconds.
Yes, perhaps. But there's not a cloud in the sky tonight. All those stars you pointed out are proof of that.
Doesn't have to storm here. A heavy rain up in the hills will do it too.
All right. I bow to your superior expertise, Frank.
As they rode on, Frank thought about how he and Conrad had been complete strangers, unaware of each other's very existence until Conrad was 18. It was no surprise that Conrad didn't really regard him as a father. Faced with the trouble Conrad had encountered with his rail line, he had turned to Frank more as a business partner than a member of the family. Still, that didn't mean Frank couldn't try to teach him a few things.
Frank, I've been thinking. Why didn't those men press their attack tonight? There must have been several of them, judging by all the shooting that was going on. I'm sure they outnumbered us.
I was ready for them and put up a fight. They didn't like that.
But if they wanted to avenge the men you killed, surely they were prepared to face some danger in doing so.
Some fellas want more than just to have the odds on their side. They don't want the other fella to have a chance at all. From the way those hombres lit a shuck out of there, I'd say that's the sort they were. If we hadn't fought back, yeah, they would have killed us. But once they heard a few slugs whistling around their own heads, they decided it wasn't such a good idea.
I'm sure you're right.
Men like that will usually hang back and bide their time, wait for another chance to get what they want. That's why we have to keep our eyes open.
Are you saying that we'll have this threat hanging over our heads until you manage to kill all of the men who are after us?
Or until they get tired of it and give up. Whichever comes first.
A veritable sword of Damocles hanging by a thread.
I wouldn't worry too much.
And why not?
It takes a damn good shot to hit a thread.
By noon, the two riders, the pack horses, and the dog that padded along with them had swung farther to the north and west, still following the railroad tracks. Straight ahead of Frank and Conrad was an easy pass between the two mountain ranges.
Those mountains to the south of us are the Floridas. The ones to the north are the Mimbres.
I'm aware of the Mimbres Mountains. We have a mine there. I believe it produces silver ore.
I'm not surprised. There's ore of various kinds all over this part of the territory. In the old days, prospectors sunk little one-man shafts in quite a few places, but it was too hard to get the ore out, and there wasn't enough of it to make the effort worth their while. With modern mining methods, though, I reckon it's easier to make a mine pay.
How much do you know about modern mining methods?
I'm no expert, if that's what you're asking. Most of what I know comes from listening to men talk who do know something about it. But I heard enough to know that mining isn't a game for a lone man anymore. Hasn't been, really, since the big companies went into the Comstock lode up in Nevada and showed the way to get really rich. One-man operations just won't do anymore. Last place they did was probably in the Black Hills, around Deadwood. And that boom was over more than 10 years ago.
Browning Mines and Manufacturing is quite successful.
I'm sure it is. All the reports I've gotten from my lawyers have been positive.
Now that we've started branching out into railroads, it's only a matter of time until the Browning Holdings represent one of the largest, most lucrative business enterprises in the country.
I reckon you'll have your hands full just keeping up with everything.
Yes, I'm sure I'll need a great many competent men working with me.
You're not talking about me doing something like that, are you?
You? Good Lord, no. What do you know about business? Except, of course, the killing business.
There were a few minutes of strained silence as Frank stared straight ahead.
I didn't mean for that to sound so offensive, Frank. Honestly, I didn't. It's just that the thought of you in a suit, with a tie around your neck, shut up in some stuffy office... Well, I just can't imagine it. I truly can't.
That's all right, kid. Neither can I.
As another train passed them, Frank wondered briefly if any of the passengers looked out their windows and saw the two men riding in the distance. At the fast clip those trains moved, he and Conrad wouldn't be visible for long, dwindling into the distance and then vanishing, almost as if they had never been there. At least from the perspective of those rail travelers speeding east into a newer, modern, more civilized world. A few minutes after the train had passed out of sight behind them, Frank got a vivid reminder that there were still vestiges of the older, more untamed West.
Oh!
He reined in sharply and looked toward one of the foothills of the Mimbres Mountains.
Well,
what have we got here?
What is it? You look like something's wrong.
Don't know if it's wrong or not. Could be they don't mean us any harm.
Who?
Look yonder at the top of that hill.
Frank didn't point, but the direction of his steady gaze was enough for Conrad to follow.
Good Lord! Are those Indians?
That they are.
Can you tell what tribe?
Well, from what I see, they're wearing blue shirts. More than likely with red headbands holding back long black hair. That's a standard getup for Apache warriors.
Apaches! Do they see us?
They see us. We see them. Everybody sees everybody.
Are they looking to attack us?
Well, these warriors are on horseback. Apaches aren't really horse Indians, like the Comanche or the Sioux. Most of the time, they think a horse is more a source of food than something to ride.
But these are riding. What does that mean?
Well, sometimes they use horses when they're moving their families. Hopefully, that's what these men are doing.
Then why are they staring at us?
Same reason we're staring at them, I guess. They're curious.
You hope?
My hope, Conrad, is that they're not part of a war party. But there are three of them and only two of us. So they might be tempted.
What can we do? Should we just sit here and try to outstare them?
I can't see that it's hurting anything. Keep an eye on them while I look around to make sure they're not just trying to distract us while some of their friends sneak up on us.
How could anybody sneak up on someone in this arid wasteland? There's no place to hide.
You'd be surprised how little cover it takes to hide an Apache warrior. But I don't see anything behind us.
Frank, one of them is doing something.
Frank looked up at the hilltop and saw that one of the warriors had raised his arm above his head. Clutched in his hand was a rifle. Frank reached for his own Winchester and slid it out of its saddle sheath. One-handed, he thrust the rifle into the air above his head. The Apaches wheeled their ponies and disappeared in the blink of an eye.
What the hell was that all about?
Just their way of saying howdy, I reckon. Sort of acknowledgement that we each knew the other was there.
They're going back to get the rest of their tribe, or whatever you call it, and then they're going to attack us.
I hope not. We might could handle two or three of them, but a whole war party... Imagine we'd lose our hair.
Snakes and scorpions and now Apaches.
That's right. There's something interesting everywhere you look.
Yeah. What a treat.
Let's go, Stormy.